There was a time when you could turn up with a big black Bible and 60 pages of notes. I've got the big black Bible. I haven't got 60 pages of notes, you'll be pleased to hear. But now I've got this little thingy, and I've got to keep my eye on that. And for somebody who's IT challenged, and I've got to get my glasses on and off at the appropriate time, it could be a fun morning. Okay, over the last few weeks, we've been hearing the whys. I think James started us off with why Christianity. And then I think Neil was then next with why Jesus. David spoke last week on why me. So I didn't want to be the guy that altered things too much. So I thought, I moved everything around, and I think I've done quite well, really, in fitting it all under why church. Now, if anybody would like to know who the white T-shirt is, I think it could be John. It's Abby. There we go. So if you would like to know what's happening, do please speak to them at the end of the meeting. The pictures will become obvious as we go along the morning. Okay. I think that might have been built 2 or 3 years ago. Okay, why church? So why did I start along this route of thinking why church? Okay. So as you know, I have one son that thinks nothing of reading 7 books stuffed under his bed in one go. And he was the one that really introduced me to Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And the more I read about this guy, the more I read about the sayings of this guy, I felt I wanted to get to know him a bit. There was something a bit special about this chap. So I got an autobiography, which is thicker than that. I haven't been able to read it as quickly as I would normally read it. But this guy is such a fascinating young man. He was only about 39 when he died. He was born before the Second World War. Was so intuitive and in touch with God, actually knew what Hitler was before Hitler came to power. And from day one, stood against everything that Hitler stood for. And, you know, just the tragedy of reading this guy's autobiography and the way that Hitler just almost destroyed the Christian church in Germany in insidious ways. Not openly. Openly, he would say he was a Christian. But by the time he came to power, he was God. And he'd just infiltrated the church in Germany. Dietrich Bonhoeffer stood against this guy and paid for it with a heavy price, was actually imprisoned towards the end of the Second World War and was actually hung. I suppose Hitler would say for treason, because he would not recant on his faith. But there were two questions that really Bonhoeffer lived with, breathed, ate, slept. And it was, what is the church and how does it manifest itself? And he was almost consumed with these two questions. And that started me thinking, because I was going down the line of radical. This guy was radical. My goodness. He was going to stand completely for what he believed. He was not backing down on the truth of the gospel. And then a few Sundays ago, if you remember, David spoke to us about love. And the following week, I went to hear Abby speak, and she spoke about love. And I thought, so how, as a church, do we marry these two things up? Worshipping this morning, the love of God is just overwhelming. But how do we marry up that radical side to the love of God? And I thought the best place to go back to is the New Testament, is Jesus. Everything we are, everything we can ever learn, everything we can ever know, it's in Jesus. It's all there for us to learn, for us to know, for us to see. And we've got to remember that Jesus grew up as a Jewish boy. He grew up in the Jewish culture. He would have learned the hundreds of rules and regulations that the priest set down. Jesus knew all about that. He would have known all about the Roman occupation. Very cruel, very sadistic, very perverted people. He would have known all about that. This was an empire that wanted world dominion. This was an empire that was very corrupt in government. This was an empire that had every sexual perversion and cruelty that you could ever think of. And in my mind, I'm thinking, do you know what? That sounds a bit familiar. That sounds a bit familiar when we look at the society that we're living in today. And yet, when you look through and go into what Jesus did, he challenged every cultural norm. He challenged everything that was said and done. Early on in his ministry, he was walking from Jerusalem to Samaria, or Samaria to Jerusalem, but he was on that path anyway. And the disciples had gone off to the village, maybe to get some food, we don't know, but they'd gone off, and the disciples come back and they see Jesus sitting at the well talking to this woman. Probably one of our favourite accounts. Doesn't it just show the love of God? Doesn't it just show how incredible God's love is to this woman? And he talks about the rivers of living water, and it's just an amazing account of God's love. But the disciples come back. Now, they haven't been with Jesus very long. What's their impression? What's he doing? Hang on a minute. Men shouldn't be seen talking to women on their own. It gets worse. She's a Samaritan. It gets worse than that. She must be somebody that nobody wants to know, because why is she out at midday? Why is she getting the water at midday when she's not with the other women in the morning collecting the water? You can imagine Peter, who's never backward in coming forward with what he's got to say and makes it known, being a bit put out. They may be rough and ready, these fishermen, but they were also part of the Jewish culture. They knew what the priest would say. They knew what would, you know, the sort of gossips that would go on about this man talking to this woman by the well. You can imagine Peter saying to John, he seems to get on well with you. Do you want to go and have a word with him? Tell him, you know, this is not the done thing. We don't do this sort of thing. This is not part of our culture. This is not part of the norm. And you can almost imagine Peter being a bit, oh, what's going on here? I can remember when Al and I first became street pastors. We hadn't been street pastors very long, and I got a call from a couple of door staff from one of our more salubrious establishments in Cardiff, asking us to go along and to help a woman. And we turned up at this place, and this poor lady this poor woman was down the alleyway. And two things struck me as I came around the corner. One was she was extremely drunk. Not just drunk, extremely drunk. The second thing that struck me was how beautiful she was. This was a very outstandingly pretty girl. So we went to talk to her. And within a very short time, she'd already, you know, in a babbled way, told us that her age, that she was in a firm of solicitors, she was hoping to become a barrister. She had a flat down the bay, she had the car. You know, this was a successful woman. Now, one of the problems of street pastors, of course, those that have been out on a Saturday night, we are not always in control of what we do. And this lady decided to vomit right down me. Now, I would like to stand here and say, as a good Christian woman, I said, oh dear me, I'll just wipe myself down. Ah, I did not say that at all. I was annoyed. I was cross. This was only 1 o'clock in the morning. I've got to stay like this now till 4 o'clock. And as I'm thinking this, and I'm looking at this girl, I'm suddenly aware that the two guys, the bar staff, I'd be rating this woman something terrible. They are calling her for everything that she is. They are sun liberating her. And do you know those moments when God grabs you by the collar and says, just what do you think you're doing? Who do you think you are to judge this woman? What do you think you're doing? And as my heart began to change towards her, she began to open up. And these guys were saying, oh, for goodness sake, leave her in the gutter. That's where she's not worth it. Leave her in the gutter. That's where she belongs. You know, you make your bed, you lie in it. Go and find somebody else. And suddenly God's saying to me, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. As this woman began to talk, I suddenly realized the outside looked amazing. Inside, she had nothing. And as she began to open up and as she began to explain her life and talk to me about what was going on, suddenly this woman had nothing. She had nothing. So the culture will say, walk away. That's their decision. They've decided to do that. They're not worth it. Leave them where they are, leave them in the gutter, walk away. But what does the church say? What does the love and the radical in us say? That says, hang on a minute, she was created in the image of God. Hang on a minute, God so loved that woman that he sent his son. Whatever we see, God sees something in her. God saw something in her that was worth dying for. So who am I to say any different? Who am I to walk past on the other side? Do you remember the time when Jesus was teaching the children, and the children came running to him? This was somebody that people wanted to be with. This was somebody that people crowded around. Even the children ran to him. Even the children wanted to be a part of what was going on and wanted to sit on his knee. And the disciples, again, bless them, they're still learning. This is still early days. Where's the mothers? Where's the mothers? Come on. The mothers are failing again. Get the mothers. Sort these kids out. They're in the way. They're a nuisance. What are they doing? Get them out of the way. They've got no business here. And I was thinking about Steve's fantastic holiday club we did in the summer. We had a ball. It was lovely with those kids. They were just so fabulous. And we had a lovely time with them, and we had a great time with them. But now I'm thinking, David wants to run a youth club. I think we're in for a different type of child. I think we're in for kids who are broken, who don't know what it is to have parental love, who don't know what it is to have acceptance, unconditional acceptance. You see, the culture will say, they're just a nuisance. Just let's find something, you know, hide them away. We don't want to know. They're a nuisance. Get rid of them. They're not grateful anyway. Whatever you do, it doesn't matter. They're not going to be grateful. They don't care. Well, you know, I mean, the family's had years on the dole. So what do you expect? Haven't we all heard it? Haven't we all also heard, and I've heard, I wish I never had you. Have we heard that? This is what the kids are living with. That's what the culture will tell us. What does the radical, what does the church say? The church says, do you know what? Those kids, the sort of snotty, smelly ones that always want to sit next to you, those are the kids that I want to love. I want to bless. I want to break that cycle. I want to show them what it is to actually be loved, accepted unconditionally. I want them to know that there is an answer for them, that there is a way out, that there is a different life, that there is a worth in who they are, that they are worth Jesus dying for. We look at the lepers. I mean, we're getting into serious stuff now for Peter, bless him. I'm sure that he had a fit. Lepers were untouchables. You didn't go anywhere near lepers. They lived outside of the city. You know, they were given food. People would leave food, and then the lepers would pick up the food. Who are the lepers for us? Who are the lepers for us today? For all of us, It might be very, very different things, very, very different types of people. There are some people that we feel, yes, we can get on with, yes, we can relate to. There are other people that we feel, you know, and even as Christians, you know, we've got to be honest. There are people where we shrink back, where we think, I'm not sure I can do that. I'm not sure that I can love them unconditionally. I'm not sure that I can move towards them and show them the grace of God. The problem is about untouchables is we live in a culture where people are judged on what they see. So they'll judge you on your car, on your house, on your children, on your job, on your finances, on the way you dress, on the way you look. A judgment is made about you. But what does the church say? What does the radical culture say? Jesus says, come as you are. If he didn't, if he hadn't, we wouldn't be here today. But he didn't say, get yourself sorted before you come to me. Wash yourself up a bit. He said, come as you are. With all the mess that's your life, with all the mess that's there, just bring it. Come as you are. Because he's the one that's going to clean us. He's the one that's going to put it right. He's the one that's going to sort us out. He's the one that loves us unconditionally. Remember the story in the temple? Jesus goes to the temple. And what he sees is everybody selling and buying and selling, and it's become a marketplace, really. I think I'm going to put this down for a minute. I'm almost afraid to let it go. Right, I'm going to put it down. Right, that's better. Jesus goes to the temple, and there's buying and there's selling going on. Now, I have a feeling this wasn't a bad day in the temple. The feeling you get is this was a regular thing. You know, so it was like Sunday, market day, as well as going into the meeting, right? So that would be great, wouldn't it? Market out there and then come into the meeting. So they had market day and then all go into the meeting. And I don't think it was a one-off. This was something that was their policy or whatever. I don't know. It might have been one of the hundreds of rules that they had. The focus of who they were had got lost. The focus of the church had got lost. The sad thing is, you know, we can look at that and think how dreadful that is. But we look at our culture and we think, what is it that people think about the church today? What do they think about us? Is this just a nice, you know, join the bingo club, join the scouts, join the church? Is this just a nice little get-together that we have on a Sunday morning? If the people out there think about church at all, many nowadays don't think about church, don't think about the people of God. It's irrelevant to their lives. And very often in the past, we have lost really that focus. What is the church? Who are we? What does it look like, as Bonhoeffer would say? What does it look like in our culture? During the third century, some of the Christians in sort of North Africa and Egypt, because of the Romans, felt that the church was becoming too like the Romans. They were becoming so relevant that it was difficult to tell the difference between the Roman sort of nation and the Christians. And so they decided that what they would do is they literally fled the cities, went into the deserts and set up communities in the deserts, which eventually over time became monasteries. They became known as the Desert Fathers. I believe there were mothers there as well, so we're okay. And they went away because they felt there was something that they couldn't cope with, that life had become too grey, And so they just left the cities. Now, I found what John Stott was saying. No, that's not John Stott. That's Isaiah. We'll probably come back to that. Yes, John Stott. Okay. John Stott says, we are neither to seek to preserve our holiness by escaping from the world, nor to sacrifice our holiness by conforming to the world. Now, a few years ago, 10, when I was a young girl, I was brought up with, you don't go to the cinema, pubs, no word. I don't think I went into a pub till I got married, but I don't think that's Alan's fault. Don't go to the cinema, don't get tainted with the world. So I grew up in this very claustrophobic atmosphere where I didn't have any Christian friends. You know, I went to school with people, went to work with people, but then that was it. You know, once I got home, you went back into this little bubble, and I didn't really have any non-Christian friends because that was of the world, and we didn't do that. And then it was almost like we swung then the other way, where we then became so relevant that it was actually very difficult to tell who was a Christian and who wasn't. And in our attempt to be relevant to our society, we lost again the focus of who we are and what we are in God. We have to be part of the world. Of course we do. We have to reach out. But there's a difference between reaching out and conforming to what the world says and to what the world does. I was reading as well a story and a book as well about Jonah. Now, Jonah was a man who he loved God. He served God. He was a good guy. But there was something in Jonah that you felt almost couldn't cope with God's grace and mercy and love. And when he was asked to go to Nineveh, he didn't. He ran away to Tarshish. Nineveh was, again, a world power. It was barbaric. It was cruel. These were not nice people. I almost felt like there was something in Jonah that said, why should they get born again? What do you want to live them for? Look at them. Look at what they're doing. Look at the sort of lives they're living. Look how they're acting. And there was something in Jonah that couldn't cope with God's immense love and grace and mercy towards these people. And so he ran away to Tarshish, which at the time, Solomon used to have 2 or 3 ships that would come from Tarshish because it was a center of richness. And Solomon would get his ivory and his gold and his spices and his perfumes from Tarshish. And so Jonah ran away to Tarshish, somewhere nice and easy, where he could live out his Christian life in peace, where it didn't disturb him. Somebody once wrote, and this is my goodness. In Tarshish, it was possible to have a religious career without hearing or dealing with God. And sometimes we can feel that. We've had maybe, phases of our lives where we've almost felt that our Christian lives have lost the bubble. And it's almost become a career. We do the right things and we say the right things. And we turn upon a Sunday and we're in home group and we're... But that radicalism that says, I'm going to stand for truth. I'm going to stand for God's love. Never mind what. Sometimes gets a little bit dimmed. As I prepared this, and I've been thinking about this for over a few months, and I've decided that I don't want to be relevant. I want to be radical. How can I be relevant in a society that treats children with such contempt? How can I be relevant in a society that says, it doesn't matter if babies are aborted. There are any fetuses. How can I be relevant in a society that says, do you know what, you can get drunk every night, you can waste your money, you can, you know, whatever. I don't want to be relevant to that. I don't want to be lost in that. I want to be radical. I want to be a person that says, do you know what, it's not right to abort babies. Do you know what, it's not right that we treat our children the way that we treat our children. It's not right that people are dying in Africa still because they can't have fresh water. It's not right that young women are taken as prostitutes and sold as slaves. This is not right. I don't want to be relevant. I'm tired of being relevant. I want to be radical. I want to see God break the chains of those women. I want to see God break the chains of those people for those children so those children are healed and don't carry that on to the next generation. I want to see young women that feel not under threat when they get pregnant, that they have to go this way. And the church has been quiet. Very often we've been quiet. And we've not said what we felt because we didn't want to muddy the waters. We didn't want to cause a wave. But it's time for the church to be radical with love. That love that God gives us, that flows through us, that almost drives us into what he wants us to do. This is an amazing, and I, yes, I'm going to put it up, if I can find it. I've been reading a book. I do like the books by John Ortberg, and he talks about things like, you know, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out the boat. I love that title. I love it. And he was talking about the men taking the paralytic young man and dropping him in through the roof. And he's talking about communities, and he's talking about church. Now, this challenged me, and is challenging me. No, wrong one. Hey, oh. That's it. Thank you, Joy. And he says this, community gets built by servants. Great communities get built by roof crashers. He calls it the fellowship of the mat. It's where a group possesses and implements an irrational commitment to the well-being of its members. The key word there is irrational. In great communities, people carry mats, crash through roofs for each other without asking, what's in it for me? That takes some doing. You know, hands up if you're there yet. Don't. We're not talking about making a community, a nice community. We're talking about a radical community that is willing to crash through roofs to make sure that the people that we're involved with get to Jesus. Whether it's in our community or whether it's the people out there. So when we start the youth club, we're going to crash through roofs to make sure those kids get to Jesus, regardless of what we think about them, regardless of our own opinions, regardless of if they are the snotty kids that smell. We're going to crash through roofs to make sure they get there. Those people in Pentrebane, those people in Fairwater, they need people who are going to crash through roofs to get them to Jesus. Those guys were willing to do anything. They must have, can you imagine people laughing at them? You know, well, what's he doing now? Oh, come, he's taking him up the steps. Oh, what's he doing now? But they didn't care. That didn't matter. They knew Jesus was the answer. They were going to get that guy to Jesus, whatever it took. And we almost need to take on that radical mindset. We are going to get these people to Jesus, regardless of what it takes. What I found just thrilling as well doing this is we are part of a huge sort of flame that's carried, being carried through the generations. you know, starting with Jesus and the disciples, and you go into the book of Acts, and you go into, you know, the Reformation, and then you come up to modern day. And we are part of that. So we are not this little group sitting here on a Sunday morning. We are part of something that is massive, that is huge, that has been going on for generations. And we are a part of that. Alan and I have been very privileged over the last maybe couple of years to meet people from other areas in Wales and to meet other leaders. There is something exciting happening in Wales. It's very tiny, little flickering flames, but something is happening. God is doing something in this land of ours. And it seems like the past hurts and the divisions and the schisms and the doctrine and the dogmatic doctrine. God is breaking it down and bringing people together. Theo Hobson says, our Christian culture and our church needs to cultivate an anarchic lightness, a lust for freedom, a celebratory spirit. We need to learn almost from the festival culture. We yearn to join a crowd that is celebrating Christianity. Christianity is meant to be a religion of celebration. Have you ever been, you know, it's like laughing. If somebody laughs, it's very difficult not to laugh. You have no idea what you're laughing at, but it's very difficult not to get caught up in that spirit of what's going on. When the church, you know, when God fires the church, it'll become like a magnet. It's a magnet. Because people will see there's a celebration, there's this amazing stuff going on in the church, and they want to know what's going on. They want to be part of it. What's going on here? It becomes a magnet to the people outside. Let me say this, and I've been a Christian, you know, a few years now. Very privileged to have been a part of this church from the beginning. Let me say to each one of you are unique. Absolutely unique. Pete, there is absolutely no one else in the world can take your place in this body, in this church. Shane, no one can take your place. You are unique in this body, in this church. Maynard, Bill, Jill, every single one of you, there is no one to take your place within this body, within this church. You are unique. You are special to the body of Christ. Each one of us has been handpicked by God. Each one of us has been placed by God. And we might think, do you know what? We're just small and, you know, you look at Willow Creek, 20,000. You look at Korea, and it's 100,000, you know, and how many are here? Do you know, but we're part of that. It's not them and us. It's not them in Korea and them over in America and them over and us here. We are the church. We are part of something that is massive, that is wonderful, that is awesome, that is bright, that is vital. We are part of that. We are part of that. As I sort of want to finish there, what I want to say is this. If people, you know, feel that they want to be prayed for, of course, we're here to pray and we're here to minister. But what I really felt this morning in my heart was we need time to allow God to speak to us. I was thinking of the scripture in Matthew 8. It talks about putting your hands to the plough and not looking back. Now, for some of us, we may have held on to that plough for a long time. But life has caused our hands to slip, caused our hands to get sticky or dirty, and our hands are slipping from the plough. And it may be that we need to evaluate. You know, in work life, you've got an appraisal. Sometimes, as Christians, we have to sit down and appraise where we're at. What we're looking for. What's God saying to us? What is he saying to you? And I felt, rather than maybe an emotional response or whatever, time needs to be given for us to spend time with God. And almost go to God and say, let's have an appraisal time. Talk to me again. What is it you want me to do? Where is it you want me to go? How do you want me to deal with this? What do you want me to do as part of the church? Where's my place? Where do I fit? That might be changes of attitude for us. It might be changes of thinking. It might be changes of diary. But we need to go back to God sometimes and just say to him, what is it that you're wanting me to do? This I absolutely love. Most of us, I think probably everybody here, will know Terry Virgo. And he wrote a book a few years ago. I can't even remember the name of the book. But he wrote this, which I think is just awesome. But his church will live forever. His glorious church, with all its variety, is the pinnacle of God's creative skill. Is it right that we should go to church on Sundays, just sing four hymns, hear a sermon, go home? What a waste of God's wonderful gifts. Remember, only the church survives. The rest of creation will be cast away. The seas, the mountains, the forests have not captivated him, however much they impress us. But the beautiful, wonderful, multicolored church, God will keep forever. The forests haven't captivated him. We have. How amazing is that? We have captivated the heart of God. How incredible is that? We may not feel like that. We may not see it in ourselves. But as God looks at us, we captivate his heart. How incredible is that? These are some of the people that have captivated. This is the church, the glorious, wonderful, magnificent church. In all its forms, in all the times we miss it, in all the times we get it wrong, in all the times that we think, oh, why did we say that? Why did we? This is the pinnacle of God's creative skill. We are his delight. We are his delight. So what I did was, I just want you to enjoy God's favor, his smile, his love, his heart towards you. And so I asked Pete to just finish. I just want to praise God. I just want to bless him that people like us, he has brought together and created this huge, wonderful organism that we call church. So just be blessed in what God has done. Thanks, Peter.